I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecoventry.ca. Sam Champagne joins me now. He will be starring in a unique concert experience, Twilight in Concert. It's this Friday night, the 14th of March, at the Orpheum Theatre. The filmed concert experience will feature the original Twilight movie, a live 12-piece band on stage, Candles, and Mr. Champagne performing the iconic score. You've got the live music in perfect synchronization with the full-length film on a big screen in the legendary Orpheum. I'll ask Sam about the Twilight movies and the music, as well as how nostalgic everything is, considering it's been 15 years since the original film was released, and I forgot that a number of key scenes in the picture were shot in and around British Columbia. Visit twilightinconcert.com for tickets and information. Sam Champagne is a Canadian tenor and concert producer. His voice has been described as having impeccable intonation, correct diction, expression, and musicality. He's been touring the country in Twilight in Concert since 2024, and later this year, he'll headline the Symphonic Bond Tour, as well as Frozen in Concert. Visit samchampagne.com for more. We spoke last week with Sam joining me from Montreal. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Sam Champagne. Mr. Champagne, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So I'm 42, and I never watched the Twilight movies when they first came out. But, you know, I recall just how big a phenomenon they were in our culture. And then I looked it up, and I had to shudder because it's been 15 years. And I guess for a lot of people, a lot of the fans on the first go-round, they're now nostalgia. What was your own relationship with the films?
Well, I basically grew up with them. I mean, I'm 26 years old, so they came out when I was somewhat young, and they were all the rage, you know, at school. Yeah. And I was semi into them when I was very young, but I think I got more into them as I grew up, actually, because as I grew up, I started getting like into different trilogies and stuff. I've always been kind of a nerd. I like the Star Wars and the Lord of the Rings, and so Twilight kind of fits into that kind of world of trilogies that you kind of can't avoid if you really like trilogies. So,
yeah, the thing that struck me, Sam, is just how robust they are. Because I mean, people who were young then, as well as adults, I mean, took to these movies when they came out. And then now you've got this new audience that are growing up and that'll discover these films for the first time thanks to streaming and the sort. It just seems like the fandom, I guess, just keeps growing generation after generation, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think part of that is because of the aesthetic of the movies. The aesthetic is something that I think especially Gen Z relate to a lot, you know, the dark, brooding vampire kind of aesthetic. I guess you could see it with the success of Nosferatu, that people really want that kind of aesthetic that toes the line between horror and romance. It's quite popular, so I think that's what makes them so good. Yeah.
And then another thing that will definitely interest people in this part of the country is that a number of the scenes, I forgot about this, were filmed here in British Columbia, weren't they?
Yeah. One of the movies after the first one, I think.
I see.
And actually, where we're performing, the Orpheum, I think, was featured in the last one, Breaking Dawn.
Mm.
Yeah, the scene where Edward kills some guy because he was about to kill someone else, so he was, like, being a good guy.
Yeah.
That was filmed in the Orpheum where I'm actually going to be performing, so I think that's a really cool link.
Yeah, it's a great way if you're like me and haven't seen any of these films to get introduced to them, especially that setting of the Orpheum, which is a great hall to begin with, of course live music. Nothing beats live music. So as for the music that we'll hear in your own singing, I guess it's timed to what we see on the screen. Is that right?
Exactly. So I have to sing the whole score of the movie. From A to Z, basically. It's all me, and I have to make my voice fit all the different styles of music, all the different singers, to the best that I can to give the closest experience to the movie.
So what is it like for you to do that night after night? I mean, you're obviously a fan, so you're not sick of the movies, but I mean, did you hear the reaction from the audience when you're performing? I mean, it must be a great kick for them to have this experience altogether.
Yeah, I mean, the fans were super receptive. I sort of fed into it, too, a little bit because I sort of dressed up with, like, a sparkly tank top. So I referenced the diamond skin that Edward has. So I think they liked that when I showed that off a little bit. So that was pretty fun. But, yeah, they do definitely get a kick out of it.
And there'll be candles, too, on stage, as I understand?
Yeah, 1,000 candles, so we really set the mood and creates a really nice ambiance.
Yeah. Now, I understand you're a tenor, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
I've always wondered this, and who better to ask than a tenor himself. Is one born with that sort of voice, say, having that voice in the register, or can one work towards that, say?
That's a great question, actually. Honestly, I would say you're born with it. This is talking about, like, vocal registers, right? So we're all sort of born with our voice. Register has a lot to do with the length and thickness of your vocal cords, which you can't really alter.
Mm.
But it's not a hard science. You know, some tall guys like myself, actually, who I'm actually an example of someone who breaks the mold because tenors usually have shorter vocal cords, and usually they're shorter guys in general. I'm taller and have long vocal cords, so you would think I'd be a bass. But, I don't know, human body anatomy, I don't know, it's not an exact science. But, yeah, so you're definitely born with it.
And to keep yourself, because you know, our voices change as we get older, is there work that you have to do, say, physically or otherwise, to keep yourself in that, to be a tenor? I mean, I'm assuming here that eventually we all become a bass, but I don't know if that's true or not.
I think that only happens when you're extremely old. Like, there's you know, like, but you tend, if you have really good technique, you tend to keep your voice at the same register throughout your whole life, which is actually a really good thing, you know.
Yeah.
Most opera singers actually can expect to go on singing for, you know, the majority of their life, well into their senior years. So that's the great thing about classical technique.
How does a microphone affect your work as a singer? I mean, do you work less in terms of, say, straining yourself if there is if you do have something to amplify your voice in a room, say?
You definitely would. It's completely different than, like, an operatic technique when you're singing with a mic, so you don't need to recruit the same muscles that you would for opera because you're not really supposed to either. You know, with opera, which is sort of the world that I'm from, I should mention that.
Mm-hmm.
you're trying to fill a hall without amplification, so you really need to give it your all in the most efficient way possible to fill the space. But with pop singing, it's you're more going for an aesthetic, you're more going for a vibe, which I actually enjoy. You can have sort of more fun with it, and you don't need to ensure every single minute that you're being heard.
Yeah. The other thing I was wondering, Sam, and you'll indulge me because I don't sing, and I've always wondered about these things.
Maybe you will now.
Well, you very well might. Yeah. When you're going for that high note, how much of getting there is physical as opposed to, say, mentally?
Ooh, good question. You're asking questions like you are a real singer, honestly, so I wouldn't put that out of your future.
I can admit freely that I sound terrible, so this is merely out of interest.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a technical aspect to it. Your body needs to know what it's going to do to reach those high notes.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, a lot of it is mental. It's honestly probably like 80-20 mental versus physical, because your body will sort of naturally knows how to do it. You know, babies, when they're born, they scream for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and they never get hoarse. Meanwhile, if someone my age goes to a rock concert and they scream, they'll lose their voice the very next day. So it's like we're all born with this innate capability of using our voices well. We sort of get that unlearned in us as we progress in our lives, but we have to have the mental piece, so a good vocal teacher to you know, realign ourselves and our bodies and the way we think about our bodies to reach those notes, and not let our minds get in the way of it.
So then what are you thinking about as you're performing? Are you listening to the music? Are you thinking of the next, say, verse? Or what's going on in your head?
I'm trying to be in the music in the moment as much as possible and trying definitely not to get distracted, because if you do start thinking about the next thing, if you do start thinking about the next piece or something else, you get distracted from the moment and it just messes everything up. You'll lose that energy, that presence that you have and that you're giving it. And it also can go into overthinking, you know. You have to just trust that you've sung it however many times before well without messing it up, and that this time is no different. So there's no point in thinking about it too hard, you know.
And an audience can't tell when a performer's distracted, can't they?
Oh, yeah. Audiences can pick up on everything. So.
Yeah. How do you care?
Discerning.
How do you care for your voice? I mean, are there certain things that you can't do? Like, I mean, at a rock concert, for example, are you going to be screaming your head off? Or
no, I will not be screaming my head off. Obviously, I don't want to be neurotic about my voice. That's one of the major things that made me not want to pursue opera too intensely, because as an opera singer, it's really fragile. I mean, like, the voice is everything, and you really do need to care for it to the you know, hundredth degree. And that sort of, I didn't want to be like that. You know, I wanted to live a more balanced life, and I think pop singers kind of are able to have a bit of more balanced life compared to opera, at least. So I definitely don't scream. I definitely don't scream at a rock concert. I definitely have to stay hydrated. You definitely have to warm up every single day, pretty much, apart from when you're trying to take a break. So that it's a constant thing. You need to warm up. And actually, warming up is like sports. So once you're warmed up, you've kind of protected yourself from injury in the best way that you can throughout the day, which is why it's really important. So it's like if you were a sprinter and you just did a 100-meter dash without warming up, you know, you have much more chances of hurting yourself than if you'd warmed up before. It's the same with singing, basically.
It's a muscle, isn't it, that you have to keep? You can't let it just sit there and atrophy, can you?
Exactly. But if you warm it up and you take it for a little workout, then you have less chances of hurting it than if you just went cold, you know.
What's your relationship to music when you're not performing, say? I mean, can you stand music when, you know, for leisure even? I mean, are you when you're say in a shop or something and they've got the radio on and there's some music playing, are you listening to that carefully or do you try to ignore it?
That's funny. I'm completely obsessed with music. Completely obsessed. Actually, this is a great question, because this thought occurred in my mind a couple days ago, that if I were living in any other time period, say like the you know, 1800s or so, they really needed to go to concerts to hear music. You know, it wasn't an easy thing to have access to music. It's not like they were listening to it 24/7, whereas I am. Like, I'll have music playing every minute of the day. If ever there's silence, I'll be like, oh, you know, this could be improved with some sort of music, you know. So I feel very lucky to live in the time that we do, that we have such amazing access to music, both, like, at home and in concerts.
And it
makes me sad to think that other people didn't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just thought about that, because we all have these subscriptions now that we pay monthly for. We can get any kind of music. If we hear something, you know, something that's just hit the top 10 or something like that, or we read about it and we want to hear it, we can just, you know, a couple clicks on our phone and we've got it, right? We wouldn't have had that, say, 5-10 years ago, would we?
Well, it, literally, in my time, I experienced the shift from radio to streaming, and I did it by myself because I was a kid in the car being driven home from school, and I could not stand the ads. Like, they just drove me insane, and I couldn't stand not being able to choose what I wanted to listen to. So streaming came in, and I was just like, well, this is total freedom. This is the best thing ever.
So do you listen widely then in terms of your tastes? I mean, are they as wide as say, whatever program we have, and you open it up, and then you see that thing on the front page of Apple Music or Spotify, where you get all these recommendations?
Yeah, extremely wide. I try really hard not to be a snob, because I feel like I grew up in a bit of a culture where, you know, it mattered what you listened to. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I try and find the beauty in any type of music. And I think that's a really helpful attitude to try and, you know, like, it's like when you grow up and there was that old saying, you know, like, I like every style of music except country. Mm. You know, people would say that around me and I took that on.
Yeah.
And then I started, as I got older, I was like, why do I think this way? Why, you know, who decided this for me? So then I did a deep dive into country music and it turns out it's just as good as any other music, and now I love it too. So
yeah, I'm the same way too, and I love going through maybe once a month to the, you know, whatever the Billboard is, the Billboard list, and just listening to, you know, the top 10, 15 songs. You know, not all, some of them I don't like, and so, you know, you skip them, right? But you listen to a little bit, and so you get an idea of what's happening, not just in the culture, but, you know, in the world itself, because, I mean, it's important to know what's going on, I guess. And music is one of those things throughout history that tells us a lot about the people, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's a good habit to have, actually, to look into the top tens.
So back to Twilight, the score itself, I forgot to write down the person who wrote the score, but I looked him up, and he's written scores for other movies that we all know, nominated for Oscars as well, right?
Yeah.
What's that like to perform? And I guess if you're a fan, well, whether you're a fan or not, the music is recognizable, isn't it? When we're sitting in the Orpheum and we hear this, we'll know the music, won't we?
Definitely. I mean, Bella's Lullaby is like super famous. So there's that, and then there's all the music that I sing. You know, songs from Muse, Linkin Park, etc. And a lot of them are even viral. You know, there's that. That song, the Hoa 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 song, is what it's actually technically called.
Yeah.
And that's a really viral moment that everybody starts screaming when I start singing. So I find that so hilarious because that song went viral on TikTok.
Yeah.
It has its moments and it's had its comebacks, you know.
Yeah, that's a funny thing.
Social media.
Yeah, that's a funny thing about social media is that we'll hear something, and then we won't know what that's from, and then if we look it up, we'll say, oh, that's from that movie, you know, or something like that. In terms of the audience, because you've performed the show already elsewhere, is that right?
Yeah, twice.
What's the audience like? I mean, is it? It's not just people your age, it's people my age as well, right, and even older?
Yeah, it's mixed. I mean, I honestly didn't get the best view of the audience, mm-hmm. you know, because they tend to dim the lights in the hall. So I can't see everybody, but I know the front row is a lot of, like a totally mixed bag. I do hear a lot of girls screaming though, which that's all I can say basically about that.
Yeah. Oh, it must be fun as the star of the show to hear, you know, that kind of screaming, right? I mean, it must be cool, right?
I mean, coming from a classical background, it's like a totally new world.
Sam, it's been such a
Yeah,
indeed. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. Break a leg, as I say. Thanks for your time today.
Same. Pleasure is mine. Have a great one.
The website for more is at samchampagne.com. Tickets for Twilight in Concert can be had at twilightinconcert.com. That's at the Orpheum Friday night, the 14th of March. It's star Sam Champagne. Join me on the line from Montreal and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.